Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Well, welcome to Monday here on ESPN 680 105.7. I'm sure there's a lot of a little disappointed at the very least fans on both in both bases after the weekend. My goodness, that was a bizarre weekend. I thought it looked like they both were going to win for a while there. I was like, wow, that's going to be a memorable weekend. And instead, it wound up being a split, one win and one losing. They both went down. So. The good news is for Louisville fans, both the quarterbacks won. Teddy Bridgewater won, and Lamar won. that Ravens game was amazing to watch. It really was. That was quality entertainment there. But the Louisville and the Kentucky games, if you didn't have a rooting interest, were very entertaining games. But certainly, I would say 99% of the listening audience here had a rooting interest. So they wound up being a bit disappointing. So we're going to see. I've got some thoughts on it. I know you do. Send them to us if you want to see. We can maybe discuss them. 437-9680 if you want to be part of the program. We're glad that you're making us a part of your Monday. Unusual week, exciting week. As soon as the show's over, I'm getting on my first airplane in, I believe that would be about 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, about 19 months, I think. And going to New York for the Champions Classic, which we're going to do in person with fans. So old school college basketball. And let's hope it's a safe trip for everybody. So looking forward to that. But meanwhile, football's still very much on everybody's mind. So we'll talk about that. I got some thoughts about the general picture as well. We should try and get Tim Brando back on because he is the leading spokesperson for absolutely despising the way this postseason is set up. And, you know, I dislike it as well. And I have reasons, which I'll talk about in a minute, among other things. So we'll get to that. But we're waiting for Coach Satterfield to get to the podium. As there's a press conference coming up here in just a matter of minutes. So we'll hear from him. And, well, as I said, we welcome your comments in 437-9680. And another wild weekend for college football. Not surprising in a way, because once you get to conference games, you know, there's less surprises that are going to be available. You kind of know who the other guy is. And if it's not a new coach, you've had a chance to play against him a number of times before, and you kind of know this wrinkle may work, that wrinkle may not, and so you got some things where you can keep games close. But it was another weekend where there were some surprising results, to put it mildly. But that's because, you know, we assume too much. All right, let's go to the podium. Coach Satterfield's there. Here we go.
Three rushing team in the country. I think they're running back, maybe number two in the country himself. He's a really, really good running back. Runs low to the ground. He's got good speed. I think about every game breaks off a 50-yard run. I'm just watching the film. And since they've settled in on Schrader, their quarterback, who a kid that I know ended up going to Mississippi State, transferred into Syracuse this year, and I think they were playing the other kid maybe early in the year, and then Schrader kind of came in and kind of settled in, and now he runs. I mean, he's a runner like Malik. You know, he can run. He's about 6'4", 6'5", and they're really utilizing his legs along with the running back's legs. Now they have an identity on offense. And then defensively, a very aggressive defense. I'm not sure if they're number one in sacks in the ACC. I mean, I think they are. Yeah, I mean, they're very aggressive. Tackles for loss and sacks. They're going to get after the quarterback. You know, and really try to cause havoc with that. And so, you know, it would be imperative for us to be able to, you know, occupy the ball, keep it away from their offense, and score touchdowns. I think that's going to be huge this week. They, like us, have been in a lot of games. They've lost three games by 3 points, I think, Clemson, Florida State, Wake Forest. The Wake Forest game was in overtime. And they've won their last two. And, you know, so they're sitting, you know, pretty high right now after winning the last two games and then had a bye week. So we know we'll get their best shot when they're coming in here, and but we're looking forward to it. You know, our goal as a team right now, obviously, to go take care of this game, to be 1-0 this week. And, you know, and then, you know, we've got two more games after that. So, but we're excited about this opportunity, about hosting Syracuse, and looking forward to it.
Scott, an update on Malik. How is he both physically and mentally? Because it looked like he took Saturday's loss pretty hard.
Yeah, he took it hard. I mean, as we all did. But he's doing good. He's in a much better place now. I think his injury, I think he's going to be fine. You know, we'll see. Sunday he was out on the field, didn't do a whole lot on Sunday. And, you know, pretty optimistic about him getting back out for tomorrow and Wednesday's practice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously, been a sore subject, really, in the fourth quarter. You know, we've played well the first three quarters. You go back and look at it, really well, you know, and it's given us a chance and an opportunity in the fourth quarter. We've not finished games. We've not done the things we need to do, and, you know, offensively or defensively for that matter. And we know that you got to come down. You got to finish that. It's focus. It's adjustments. It's getting the ball in the hands of the playmakers offensively. And then it's doing the right things defensively, obviously. And it's probably everything, but it starts with me, making the right calls, you know, and decisions that need to be made in the fourth quarter. This past fourth quarter. I mean, and they're all different. I mean, there's different scenarios and different games and you know, we've been behind, we've been up, we've been – there's all kind of things that have happened. But this past game, we got in a lull and couldn't get anything going. And at the end of the third and the beginning of the fourth, and then, you know, we got the ball back down six with a chance. And our guys did a great job to get down there. Now you just got to punch it in. You know, like I told our guys, if we punch it in and you score and you get the extra point, you win the game. I mean, and you played the same way, there'd be a lot more joy and excitement. But we played pretty freaking good. You know, we just didn't finish it there. So we just got to find a way. And our guys are to the point, you know, it's like, you know, not talking about it. We got to go do it. We just got to go prove it and do it. And that's kind of where we are. So we'll continue to work at it and see what we can do to better.
You walked on like a handful of plays onto the field. Why did you feel like you had to do that? And then also, is it time to put a radio in the helmet and call a football quarterback?
Well, I think I mentioned this last Monday about having to do some things different offensively. Venables and Clemson over the years, they do a great job of getting signals, whatever how they do it, they get signals. And then also, when you line down your offense, they do a great job of figuring out, okay, they're in 3-by-1 with a tight end, here's what they like to do, and then he makes his call. So it gives him a lot easier time to make his calls, and he gets their cleat dug in. And to me, they're a much better defense that way. And so we wanted to huddle. I mean, if you notice, we huddled a lot in the game and tried to limit our signals from the sidelines. So there was times where I just went on the field and tell Malik to play, and he goes into the huddle and tell him. That was the reason behind it. And then I think we had success. I mean, the first drive, we went right down the field. It was a great drive and for a touchdown. And so I do think it was successful that we were able to do that. And we did that just because of what they did. And I think having done it that game, and I thought our kids did a great job. That's the first time I've ever done it. And these guys, we meet 1 week to prepare for that. And our players did a great job, our coaches and everybody. Because you think about with our players, they're used to just getting that signal and then going and lining down. And now they have to have verbal cues in a huddle where they're not used to doing that. They're used to just getting a signal and then going lining down. So that was difficult. And I was a little worried about penalties and such. And I think we may have gotten one or two with it. But man, they did an awesome job with that. And I think it gave us a great chance. And, 400 yards, 24 points on a really good defense. And I think it worked.
Coach Ken Taylor from Wave TV, what are your thoughts on the last series, the goal-to-go situation, after you go back and look at the film? Kind of looked like Jalen might have gotten in maybe one block away from that play working. Some of the others, what kind of stood out to you?
Yeah, I couldn't even sleep again last night thinking about those plays. You know, it's it was we first play, we were thinking, okay, we think they were going to pack it all in. Let's go outside. And when we ran the outside zone, it was very close to getting in. It was probably, getting just inside the 2-yard line there. The next three plays, you know, were pass plays, and I know we didn't throw it, but they were pass plays, and you know, Clemson did a pretty good job of defending those plays, and you know, some leaks ended up running around a little bit, but you know, the whole deal was, and we had like, I think it was a minute and 21 or a minute and 23 when we got the ball, and we didn't have any timeouts, and so a little bit nervous about running. You know, we felt the first play we're going to be fine, we'll run that, and then we'll jump into the next play really quick, which we did. And then Dabo calls a timeout, really to stop the clock, which was actually good. So now we could actually regroup a little bit and figure out what we need to do for that third down. And then we called another pass play. Malik ended up, you know, coming off the left side. Basically, it's for him on the edge. He can run pass option there. Ended up running it. And then now the clock's ticking down. And, of course, you know, to run the next play, you got to get it fast, which was a sprint out play, thinking pressure's coming. And we'll get outside of all that pressure. And we got two receivers in the flat and in the back of the end zone. And let Malik just buy time and maybe try to send it in the end zone. You know, that was the thought. You know, it didn't work out that way. But, you know, pretty good defense by Clemson on that play as well. So, you know, I think, you know, with the time, no timeouts and the time coming down, I think it had something to do with the plays that we did call within that scenario.
Scott, going back to recent fourth quarter struggles, how much of a mental hurdle has that created, both with players and coaches alike, and what are you guys doing in attempts to try and tear that hurdle down?
Yeah. Well, I think during a game, we don't think about it as, okay, here comes the fourth quarter, oh, we haven't done well. I don't think we think that way. You know, our guys and our coaches and our players are just thinking, hey, you know, what is the scenario right now? And offense is on the field. It's your job to get first downs and score touchdowns. And then defense is your job to stop them. I don't think we say, okay, oh, now it's the fourth. You know, let's get scared or whatever. I don't think it happens that way. But I do think that we have been talking about it. What can we do? And I think, again, our players are like, listen, we know what we got to do. We just got to go out there and do it. And it's the fourth quarter. Let's go finish the game. You know, and it's not about the talk now. We got to have action. And so throughout the course of practice, you know, we've tried to put them in some scenarios to, you know, simulate that. It's hard to simulate it, you know, until you really get into it. And really, it's just focus, attention to detail, doing your job, doing the little things. The same things that they've done the first three quarters of these games, you know, we've got to carry it on to the last one.
Recognizing that Lamar Jackson was a generational talent, I'm wondering if you could reflect a little on his long-term impact on a program that does not seem evident from recruiting rankings or win-loss record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think he is a generational player, you know, but even him coming out of high school, I don't know how highly ranked of a recruit he was. Okay, so yeah, he's, you know, he wasn't that highly ranked, and he's one of arguably one of the best to ever play, you know, and, you know, so I think, you know, sometimes the rankings get whatever wrong, you know, whatever how you want to say that, you know. I think, you know, as a three-star player, I think there's a ton of three-star players playing right now in the NFL, making a lot of money, you know. And there's also five-star, you know, it's four-star, those kind of guys. But I think it comes down to, in my opinion, you got to have talent, but it comes down to more what's right here and what's in the heart with these players. And he's got as much heart as anybody going. And I think that's why he's obviously had talent. He's got size. He can run. He's got an arm. But he's got that something inside of him that makes it all go. And sometimes it's hard to measure that. It's hard to measure what's inside somebody. But he's certainly a guy that, you know, will have – I mean, it'll be forever impacting this program, you know, of a guy that came through here and was able to do what he did and have that kind of impact on not only, you know, college football, but now what he's doing in the NFL is incredible. So he's going to be talked about forever. And we'll always talk about him to recruits and, you know, what he was able to do. And, hey, you know, and it doesn't matter what position you play because these guys all relate to him. They don't care if they played a DB or receiver or whatever. You know, they think they're Lamar Jackson. And, you know, for the fact that he was here, which is tremendous. And so, yeah, we'll always use him and use him and his name and appreciate him for who he is, though, just the way he approaches the game. And I love the fact of how he always talks about everybody else but himself. And I think that's huge.
You see how that resonates with the troops and the guys who are going out there. He's an NFL star?
Yeah, I think so. I think because they see themselves, they can do what they think they can do what he did, you know, and they think that, hey, man, you know, I can come up through the ranks just like he did. Doesn't matter my position. And hopefully one day come play here and then go play in the NFL and be a great football player. I mean, it's lofty, it's dreamy, you know, but it's certainly, in their eyes, it's obtainable, and I think, which is awesome.
Scott, you were talking about the recruiting weekend. What was some of the feedback maybe that you guys have received early on? And how difficult is it to pull off a weekend like that when you've got such a big game? And I know to those guys, probably winning doesn't matter, but you're trying to win a game and you're trying to host all those guys.
It's extremely difficult. You got to have a lot of staff. You know, we've hired a few. We need to hire some more in our recruiting department because there's so much going on. You know, and then when you have a bunch of them like we had. You know, how can you show attention to all of them, you know, and their moms and the dads, and they got questions, and then the recruits. And we have, you know, we had several from out west that were here who maybe hadn't been here before. And, you know, coming in, some of the feedback was, man, we thought Kentucky was going to be just fields and farm and pastures. We didn't know it was a city like this. This is kind of cool, you know. So they loved it. I mean, you know, they loved this atmosphere, and they loved what we have to offer here. And then we had local kids that were here that had a ball and loved it. I think, you know, all those things, but it takes a lot of manpower. You know, there's a lot of moving parts because we had official visitors here. We had unofficial visitors that showed up on Friday. We had some more showed up on Saturday. There's so many things that are going on. You're trying to give a tour on campus. You're trying to give a tour to our facility. You're trying to make sure that the guys on OV and their family are taken care of. You know, and meanwhile, we're trying to get ready for a game. It helped that it was a night game, so we did have a little bit more time on Saturday, you know, to really spend more time with them. You know, prior to the game. So, you know, but I tell you, the feedback was awesome. You know, and our recruiting department do an outstanding job with that. And then I think we did a good job coaching-wise, staff-wise, to say we are getting ready for a game, but we will spend time with these recruits as well.
Scott, is it kind of going off Lamar, is there a memory you have of Lamar, whether it's watching him play before you coach here or an impression when you met him that stands out to you?
Well, I mean, I obviously remember watching him play. I mean, I loved watching him play because what he did offensively, you know, is kind of what our offense was at the time, kind of what we were doing, some of the very similar things within what we're doing now with Malik, you know. So, and he just did it at an incredible level. And so I loved that. And then I was kind of, when I first met him, I was kind of in awe. You know, I was like, oh, man, that's Lamar, you know, kind of starstruck, really. And I had no idea he was that tall. You know, I thought he was going to be around a 6-foot kind of quarterback, man. But he's—I don't know how tall he is, 6'2" or three or whatever. I mean, he is tall because I couldn't believe a guy could run like that at that size, that height, that had that height, because he runs like a little guy, you know. And to be able to see him, I was like, oh wow. And then how humble he was, you know, on the field that day at practice when he came out. I'm just extremely humble and just want to hang out with the guys and. You know, he just wanted to be one of the guys when he was one of, you know, he's arguably the best player in sport and football. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about him.
Scott, when you watch these guys play, you know, you're thinking about the catch that Justin Marshall had and Tyler Harrow and so many guys stepping up. You know, is it, I guess, in a way, easier to kind of stay optimistic about? You talked about you believe these guys are going to get over that hump because you're watching throughout the game these guys kind of step up.
Yeah, I love the way they compete, you know, and – you know, they're just going to keep getting better the way they work. I mean, anybody that works like our guys, you're going to get better. You're going to keep getting better. And then, you know, as you keep playing, you're getting more and more experience, and you understand what we need to do. I mean, like a guy like Tyler Harrell, like on a couple, let's see, on two of those runs, the two touchdown runs Malik had, Tyler Harrell's the main blocker out there. Did a tremendous job blocking, and him and Marshawn Ford both on both of those runs. Great run by Malik, but two great blocks that sprung him. You know, and then Tyler, you know, Tyler's a guy, every time he catches, I'm thinking he's getting ready to score. You know, he's that kind of player. You know, we got to give him the ball more. You know, I mean, he's earned that right to play more and get the ball more because he caught that dig, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to go. We got a penalty on that play. We ended up bringing some of it back. But and then a tremendous throw and catch down the sideline, and then the fourth down you mentioned about Justin Marshall. The ball went right over one of their defenders' hands, right into his hand. He gets a foot down. It's a tremendous play. And Marshall's been playing a lot better, man, the last few weeks. And, you know, so, yeah, we got a lot of good players. And I love being around them, and they're going to keep getting better.
and we're going to win these games. I mean, that's the bottom line, and we got to have that thought process, and our guys do. And so, again, yeah, I'm excited about them. Yeah, I mean, we obviously miss Trey. I mean, Trey's a really, really good football player. You think about what he did at NC State just a week earlier with, I think he had four or five, you know, batted, knocked down balls on people trying to take advantage of him, and he wasn't allowing it. You know, we got to be better out there. You know, I mean, they hit a couple plays on us on the post route early in the game there on that first drive. We get, you know, and then I think there was a couple more they hit on the outside there. And we had a few penalties, you know, in the secondary that really hurt us. You know, as you think about the drive extending penalties, PI and a defensive holding, and then Fago's unfortunate targeting, you know, which, I mean, we can talk about targeting for a while, I think. But, you know, that extended. That was going to be third and six. And now it's first down, 15 yards closer to the end zone. They end up scoring. I mean, it's, you know, so the penalties really hurt us in this past game. And those drives, they end up scoring 17 points on those drives where we had the penalties.
You mentioned Schrader earlier, but and obviously their running game. What do you think the key is with Tucker? And then, you know, they do seem to be a lot better with Schrader, and he just seems to kind of take control of that offense.
Yeah, he what he has is a lot of confidence. He plays with that confidence, and just knowing him, I know he's a confident player. And he's got a lot of ability, you know, because he's different than Malik, because he's 6'5". You know, he's a strong runner. He'll run you over. He'll try to run you over. But he also, once he gets out, he can go with those long strides. And so I think the thing that they've done now, they got an identity. You know, they feel good about either him running or handing it to that running back. And what he does, a great job. He's got great vision. He's always got a good forward lean. And then what's impressive about the running back is that when he does break through, and if he gets to that next level, he can go. I mean, he, like I said, I mentioned, he's been over 50-yard carries in about every game. And that's impressive. You know, they have not been as good passing the ball. That's kind of been their weak link, but they've run it so well, they really hadn't needed much of the pass. You know, so obviously the key of the game will be stopping the run and, you know, making sure we're in all the gaps to be able to contain the running back and the quarterback.
Scott, you mentioned, obviously, you said it was hard for you to sleep the other day. Mm-hmm. As a coach, well, kind of a two-part question. Have you ever been through something like this where it's been three games by just like close loss after close loss? And two, as a coach, how do you go about changing either the drastic changes or slight changes you make during the week leading up to games?
Well, I've been in seasons where we've had a lot of close games. We've won a lot of them. You know, I can't really call we're losing like, you know, the games we've lost. I feel like we've mainly been on the upper end of those throughout my career. And, you know, and we talked about it all the time, it's such a fine line from winning and losing. I mean, you know, shoot, it's I go my senior year, I know it was a long time ago, we were 11-0 in regular season, but every game was one possession. We just won them in the end, in the fourth quarter. And, you know, because – and it's hard to win college football games. You could ask any coach in the country, it's hard to win. Even the ones that are winning a lot, it's hard to win. And you have to fight for every single one of these wins. These teams you're playing, they got scholarships too, and they got good coaches, and nobody's just going to lay down for you. You know, you got to go take it. You got to go make the plays when they're there to be made. And when you don't, it will cost you. And, you know, and but another example, we had an interception right before the half. You know, Chandler hits him right in the chest. We don't catch it, and they score a touchdown. You know, you have to be able to make the plays when they're there to be made. And that's all of our guys. And then us as coaches, we have to do the best job we can possibly do to put our players in position to make those plays. That's our job. And so, you know, you talk about any adjustments. I mean, that's what we have to do as coaches, to find out, all right, who needs to be in the game and what do we need to be doing with the guys that are in the game. That's our job as coaches, to set our guys up for success. So hopefully that we make those adjustments, the right adjustments as coaches, and then our kids make the plays. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, Coach Satterfield with comments. I got to be honest, and I hope this doesn't come across too harsh, because, I mean, I'm in the media. But with everything that's really facing this Louisville football program right now, and there's lots of things that are worth discussing. Did we really need like 8 questions on Lamar? I mean, seriously. I mean, he's wonderful. It's great. I guess it's nice that, you know, it's, you know, the statue, and it's, and he's good news in a sea of kind of bad news right now. But man, they just kept asking questions about Lamar. I mean, that it was just like a, you know, I don't know. It struck me as odd that, you know, there were a couple of questions. They didn't spend a long time on it. And that, you know, not that the guy's got to be grilled on the thing. He talked about it after the game. But some of the thoughts, like, I mean, I would have liked some more discussion about that the sequence with first and goal from the 2. That to me, you can do 40 minutes on that alone. Not to be critical, to be quizzical. Because as a guy who's an observer, I mean, you know, what he said was, and I thought this was really interesting. They had a buck, would they have a buck 30 or something when they got it, and they had no timeouts. That's fine. That's okay. So they tried a running play. They got nothing. But then he said, but then we tried 3 passing. We you know, ran 3 pass plays, and they never got the ball off. And, you know, we saw Lamar slip. What transpired in those? I'd like to know. And this is the other thing. I mean, that made sense to me, that they were going to try 1 run, and then they were going to try, 3 pass plays, because obviously you're either going to score or you're going to get the clock stopped, and so you got plenty of time to get those in with a minute and a half to go. But Dabo called timeout. Did that change his thinking at all? I mean, because now there probably was enough time. I mean, you could have, not that he should have, but he could have called another run and then still had time for 2 passes. If you hurry up, call 3 plays or something. That's why I'd like to know. Maybe he would have answered that question and said, no, that didn't really change the way I looked at the situation at all. But I mean, by Dabo's own admission, he was calling it to save time for his offense, because he was pretty much, you know, obviously the odds were Louisville was going to score a touchdown there, and he was trying to give his quarterback time to get a last score. And that is fascinating. And I realize, you know, the whole game doesn't get wrapped up in 3 plays, no matter how important they are and blah, blah, blah. But, he answered the question a little bit. But to me, and I get it. I don't, that, believe me, I'm not, I don't, he doesn't run from questions, I don't think. He tried to answer them. So don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing his comments. But, you know, they asked about why is the fourth quarter stuff going on? And his answer was, you know, well, we've had, you know, and it's true. You know, he said some seasons where they've had great records and they won a bunch of one possession games, and this year they're losing one possession games, and that does happen. And, you know, and his comment about, it's hard to win football games. Believe me, I'd like to elaborate on that, because, you know, Will Wolford, God bless him, used to say all the time, the other guy's got scholarships too. I mean, we tend to think like the other people are just like the Washington Generals. They're just out there, you know, kind of as the stooges for our show. We either win the game or we lose the game, but they really don't have anything to do with it. And it's not that simple. But having said that, you know, that to me is interesting, because you literally could have spent the whole day talking about that aspect of their team and not covered it, because this has got to do with things that people write books about, and, you know, people have studied for years and years. I'd love to know his thoughts on it. Like, you know, I've said for years, I think one of the problems this team has right now is, when they get to the fourth quarter, they don't have a lot of confidence they're going to win the game. And that's because, I know everyone's going to throw that on the coach, but the fact of the matter is, you know, confidence comes from one thing, in my opinion. I've defined it this way all the way going back to when I was coaching, which is successful performance under pressure. That's the only thing that gives, I may give you faith. I may have faith that you'll get this done. You know, that's fine. And that's good. And it's useful. And it's important. You know, coaches have to have faith that their players can get the job done. And that's a prerequisite. But the fact of the matter is, confidence, which is a different, you know, a different trait altogether, comes only from successful performance under pressure, and they just haven't been able to get it done. So he told me, he did what coaches do. They simulate end of game situations, and you try to, you know, you try to get in their head that, hey, blueprint. That's what I'm looking for. The blueprint for success at the ends of games. But, you know, they, until you actually do it, it's tough, and that's what they're struggling with right now. And sometimes you get them in clusters. Sometimes you get years. My brother Jim, may he rest in peace, used to say he's convinced that his NC State game, team that won the championship, which, if you know, if you've ever watched that 30 for 30, it was almost a ridiculous amount of late-game wins, you know, that they, against really prominent teams, the number one team, the number two team, the number four team in the country. But he said he thought it was payback for all those ridiculous losses, and he started rattling them off. You know, a guy banked one in from midcourt to end the game. A game he lost at Bucknell on a missed free throw. And it was just, you know, but that's – it was funny, but there was some truth to that, which is
– It was karma.
It was a payback of karma. Sometimes you build up enough angst. So if that's the case, if you're a Louisville fan, you must be thinking, boy, oh boy, we are making some deposits in that bank. We're owed a bunch. But, you know, it's tough because, you know, that's a fun and amusing way to look at it, but it doesn't work that way. I mean, it's like tossing that coin. If it's come up heads six times in a row, it doesn't mean it's coming up tails on that seventh toss. You're still at 50-50, and they've got to find a way to win some of these games. So, you know, it's tough for fans. And then the thing is, and I know somebody wrote this, I don't know, my friend Chris Moore, who I like, but he said, you know, boasting about consecutive years of bowl games in the climate today is ridiculous. And he put hashtag, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, it's maybe in the overall scheme of things, a relatively, you know, modest gauge of success. I mean, you'd rather, you know, be in conference championship games or be in New Year's Day bowl games or more prominent bowl games, if you will. But it means you've had a winning season, at least in most cases, or at least a non-losing season. And to string it together, if you're in a decent league, you know, it's when you have those non-league games, if you can get those, you know, mail order wins, it's not that difficult to get a winning season. But I don't discount it. And it gives you goals. And, I, you know, depending on where you are, you could be disappointed that, boy, that's the goal. My goal is I really thought we had a chance to be the ACC champions this year, and you know, they're out of that discussion. Okay, but there's still things to play for, and that's significant because I'm going to be curious. I really want to play Mark Stoops presser as soon as we can, to be honest with you, because I was, while Scott Satterfield was talking, I was following Twitter's you know, the reporter's comments about both his press conference and Stoops's, and a lot of the conversation, evidently, since I can only listen to one at a time, was Stoops's discussion with people asking him, well, you know, how are your players dealing with the, you know, kind of the motivation factor, since that's the new thing. Everybody wants to opt out of everything, you know, they kind of in a mindset of where they're going to opt out. I mean, people were talking about them having an 11-win season, and who knew, you know, they could actually have run the table. There was chances to do that, and now they've, you know, strung some losses together, and they're looking at still trying. Now you're trying to, what is there to play for in the rest of the season? And it's simply about making the rest of the season successful. And, you know, they have I guess it's the next game, the New Mexico game, the game that, you know, that's the one of the mail order ones.
Yeah.
Right. So that's, you know, that's actually tough to get them up for that after all this. That's the danger of putting it in this late in the season. But that should get them back on the winning track. And I don't mind doing that in a way. You know, fans will criticize it if they don't play that well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not. It's not New Mexico State. It's Vanderbilt. I knew the next
Vandy's next.
Okay. Yeah, I knew the next one was, no offense to Vanderbilt and Will Wolford and Will Purdue's alma mater, but I knew it was kind of a cupcake game still.
Yeah, but it's a conference game. I mean, that one you didn't schedule. But I don't, you know, I understand why you, and if you're in a league like the SEC or somewhere, you know, when I was in really strong leagues, and some of them were very strong at the non-Division I levels, I would try and put a non-conference game in there late because I call them run stoppers. You know, that God forbid you're just having some struggles here. It's nice for the kids to get a victory. And so you try and, you know, you try and stick one in there. And I know sometimes it's jarring. They're like, what the hell are we playing this team for in basketball in February? In this case, in football, in, you know, the third to last week of the season, or second to last week, it'll be for Kentucky when they play New Mexico. But you know, it's if you're kind of like what they're going through right now, it'd be nice to put a W up on the board. It's good for, it gets the taste out of your mouth. It's the sorbet, if you will, of the end of the season. So I'm going to be curious what he has to say about, you know, where they are. I mean, they're already bowl eligible, and they're playing, you know, for the best bowl they can get in. They were staring at the New Year's Day bowl right in the face. It's going to be, is it mathematically impossible now? I don't even know whether, you know, I have to look at the standings. They haven't looked at, we should do a conference call, or maybe we're doing that. I don't know. But, you take a look at some of the standings right now, you get a pretty good gauge for with the leagues that have the automatic tie-ins with the certain bowl games, you can kind of have an idea where people are going. UK is still they're still technically a half a game ahead of Tennessee in the league. Of course, they don't have the tiebreaker now, so if Tennessee can win, they'll be, I guess they plus must play a conference game that week. Kentucky plays New Mexico, which is how they get caught up. That's the case, then you know, they'll be I guess placed ahead. I don't know. I assume that's how that works out. They're 6-3 right now. They've got, you know, certainly the next two games are the decided favorites. That would be an 8-win season. You got to think, I assume right now they would be a favorite over Louisville, although when I looked the other day, it was not a huge favorite. But, you know, that's a game they could win. They could be staring at 9 wins, and if they win a bowl game, they could still have a 10-win season. 10-win seasons in college football are still pretty much the gold standard. You win 10 games, that's a very special season. It's not like Kentucky's got a, you know, like Alabama, they've got a laundry list of 10-win seasons, you know. So they're still playing for something. And of course, you know, it's probably not going to be a humongous bowl game, but it's if Louisville can get some couple wins down the stretch here, they would be bowl eligible as well. They got to win 2 of their last 3 to get to be bowl eligible, and it's not, you know, a lock. Duke is away, and that's the problem with that. When you haven't won, even if you're playing a bottom dweller, and Duke is winless in the league, there's no guarantee. They're playing loose. They're just trying to get a win, you know. So, but it's unbelievable. They've only scored in conference games. They've only scored 70 points, Duke. The only one who's worse is Boston College, has only scored 57, which in 5 games. Duke has scored 70 in 5 games. To contrast it, Louisville scored 163. So, I mean, you know, for what that's worth, you'd hope they get that one. So then they got to win 1 of the 2, Syracuse or Kentucky. And both of those are games that they could win, games that they could lose. You got to tip your hat to Syracuse bouncing back. I don't think people thought they were going to be very good this year. They have a winning record, 5-4. They, too, are staring at being bowl eligible. They need one more win. Their schedule is Louisville. Then they go to NC State. And then they wrap it up with Pittsburgh at home. So no disrespect to the Cards. If you're Syracuse, you're saying, you know what, boys, let's get this one. Because I'm not sure we want to go try and beat NC State on the road, or then take on nationally ranked Pittsburgh in the last game of the season to try and get into a bowl game. So they're going to get Syracuse's best shot. And if Louisville were to lose this one, they are staring at having to win their last two. And assuming they beat Duke away, which you don't assume anything when you're struggling a little bit, but they could do that. Then the Kentucky game, as if there isn't enough drama in that game, would be to see if they could get into a bowl game, which is... You know, the other side of that coin is, if that's what it came down to and they won it, it's going to feel a lot bigger than just a win to get to 6-6, to be quite honest with you. You know, there'll be a real sense of celebration in that. And obviously, we'll see. I'm really eager to hear, if you're just joining us, we heard Coach Satterfield's presser. I really want to hear Coach Stoops's as well, because they came in, as I said, on all sorts of a roll and talking about where they are in the national rankings, and maybe they could, you know, run the table. Who knows? Dream big. And just, they were really on a roll. They had winnable games, and, you know, they just now have hit a bit of a skid, if you will, although it's not like they've collapsed. I mean, it's the same thing. They're in the same boat. I mean, 45 points they gave up. They lost by 3. Mississippi State was a little bit of a faceplant, and Georgia's too good for anybody right now. So you can't read. So really, Mississippi State was the one disappointing game. But this is a game, you know, they looked at, and they certainly easily could have won. They were much like in Louisville's situation. They could have won the game. What a bizarre game for stats, by the way, wasn't it? Wasn't the time of possession like a million to 2 or something like that? I think that's right. Let me see if I can find the stats here. I thought that's right. Yeah, here it is. The time of possession was bizarre. Kentucky 46 minutes and 8 seconds and Tennessee 13 minutes 52. The offense barely got their uniforms dirty. But they got a whole bunch of points on the board. Kentucky, I mean, look at these numbers. Kentucky had 35 first downs. 35 first downs to 17 for Tennessee. That's because Tennessee was busy saying, you know, screw your first downs. We're just going to get touchdowns. we're just going to score from wherever the hell we are. It was very, very bizarre game. But certainly a game Kentucky could have won. And now they're staring at, they're 21-point favorites. Kentucky opens as a 21-point favorite at Vanderbilt. When's the last time Kentucky was 21-point favorites on the road in a conference game, like ever? That would be.
It is Vanderbilt, though. I mean, I don't want to be that guy.
No, I know, but I'm just saying. That's the point, is how far Vanderbilt's gone and how Kentucky's still, you know, pretty highly regarded. There's no question they're a much better program than they were, you know, when Stoops got here, and he's built a good program. But it's hard. He's right. Satterfield is right, and maybe that's the coach in me coming out. But it's hard to win, which is why, once again, it makes me sick. I can't read college football's postseason while I'm eating because it'll get me sick. Because here's what goes on all the time. And I guarantee you, even though I'm going to say it and explain it now, somebody will call and try and defend it because they have probably been one of the people saying what I'm going to point out here, which is, well, you see, that's why you got to do the voting there, because you got yourself a team like Cincinnati. And, you know, and people are all raving about Cincinnati, and they could barely win over Tulsa. I mean, they had to hang on for dear life against Tulsa. I told you they're just not that good, okay? And then I watched Alabama hang on for absolutely dear life against LSU, who's now 4-5, and people are, that's because LSU's really good. Why are they good? Well, because we said they're good. But why are they good? Well, they're in the SEC, yeah? And in order to be in the SEC, you have to be good, so they're good. So it's not as big a deal that Alabama won by 6 when Cincinnati only won by 8. No, because that's the whole point of playing the game, as our friend in Arizona State would say. You play to win the game, and you look around the country, and it's hard as crap to win. And there's a bunch of teams. Minnesota hadn't lost to Illinois since, you know, the French and Indian War, and they lost 6 points at home. They lost 14-6. You know, they lost. Forget about having a hard time. They lost. Baylor lost to TCU. That's the Gary Patterson wasn't on the sideline. It's the first game that he's missed that he was since 97, and they go and they beat, without their head coach, they go and beat Baylor, who was very highly ranked in the Big 12. So they go down. I mean, you know, look at our guy Jeff Brohm. Michigan State says, here we are, folks. We control our own destiny. We're one of the four select. We have been anointed. We have been tapped on the shoulder. We have been told, you can be in. You can be magic. And Purdue hung 40 on them and beat them by 11. It's hard to win. Arkansas beat Mississippi State. It's hard to win. But what we do is we take the losses that back up our theory, and we justify them away. And the ones that back up our theory about, you know, the non-Power 5 teams, we hammer them. Or the close games. Not even the losses. The close games. Cincinnati has to keep apologizing to people for winning. I really thought they would win by a lot because I thought they would be all pissed off about the first playoff thing and the country giving them no love. And there's a part of me that wonders if they looked at it and said to themselves, these are bright kids. I mean, kids that they know, the kids play and know, you know, how everything works. I wonder if there was a part of them saying, this is rigged. We can't get in. We could win 500 to nothing. They're going to find a way to keep us out. And I don't know, maybe it impacted them. I don't know. I mean, look at Wake Forest. I mean, I get the feeling that half the time when these teams lose, behind closed doors, the committee is high-fiving and smoking cigars.
Because even though Wake's in a power conference, they're not one of the brand names. Come on. They're not the brand names. You know, we could do that. I could just rattle it off and give me a gut instinct. Brand name or not. Ready? Georgia, brand name. Cincinnati, no. Alabama, brand name. Oklahoma, brand name. Oregon, on the fence. Trying to be a brand name. They're reluctant. They've had, you know.
I hate to say it. They're the token black guy in the movie. They're the token Pac-12 guy Pac-12. That I have to use.
Fair enough. That's not a terrible analogy. Ohio State, brand name. Notre Dame, brand name. Michigan State, brand name. Michigan, brand name. Oklahoma State, brand name. Texas A&M, kind of brand name. Same boat as Oklahoma State. Ole Miss, same deal, kind of brand name. Wake, no brand name. BYU, no brand name. UTSA, don't make me laugh. Auburn, brand name. Houston, trying to break to crash the party. You know, every once in a year they get their nose up above the water line and they sniff, and then somebody comes over and puts their foot in their head and pushes them back down. You know, we know already looking at them. These are top 25. They let you get in the top 25. I mean, they'll do that. You know, but beyond that, it's, you know, after that, it's Iowa, brand name, Wisconsin, brand name, NC State, trying to be a brand name, you know, kind of, same deal. They're kind of in that gray area. Coastal Carolina, don't make me laugh. Penn State, brand name. UL, it says, not Louisville. It's Louisiana, definitely not a brand name. And Pitt, kind of brand name because of their history. They used to be when the Eastern schools were independents, and they were one of the powerful Eastern independents. So they're reluctantly a brand name. But that's basically how the whole thing works. And I would go so far as to say that the brand names at the beginning of the season are divvied up into the legitimate contenders and the, you know, they still got the right name, but they're not really in the discussion. So, like, you know, Georgia's legitimate. Alabama's, well, they don't even have to play. They're perpetually legitimate. There's no question. Oklahoma is kind of a legitimate. They've kind of fallen on their face in the postseason, so there's a reluctance there. Oregon is the same deal. Ohio State, definitely legitimate. Notre Dame pisses everybody off by being regarded as legitimate. Michigan State and Michigan, yes, legitimate. Oklahoma State, the second thing, half a tier behind. And then after that, nobody else is really legitimate. No, there's not. There really isn't. The rest of them are in that half step below. If you were doing a grading system of A's, B, C, D, they're the A minuses or the B pluses, if you want. I call them A minuses. You know, they could get in there, but before the season, nobody was deciding that they were going to be great. The Ole Miss and the Texas A&Ms and the Auburns, you know, and even Baylor, you know. And then you've got that's a good way of putting it. The more I'm talking about this, the more it's making more sense. They're the A minuses. The B pluses are the teams that are in the non-Power 5 leagues that they, over their dead body, they'll consider A's, but they're a little better than the rest of their, you know, ghetto-dwelling compatriots. So, like, Houston would be in that group. You know, Texas San Antonio's 9-0. Nobody even knew that. I mean, okay, well, they're not Texas. I didn't even know they had a football team, for God's sake. You know, they're in that group. Coastal Carolina's 8-1. They're in their group, even though they won the national championship in baseball. That's baseball. This is football. We're talking about football. We're talking about football and the football field, the football players and the football budget and the football team. It's not the same thing. So Louisiana's in the same boat. They're a B. They're, you know, that's just where we are. And it's just, and I don't, again, so, well, what's your point? Well, my point is that I don't think it's realistic. And I think it's contrived to make sure that this is how we perceive it. What I just said is what their ultimate goal is for us to perceive those programs at those levels. You compare it with basketball, and it's not a matter of because, basketball's better than football. It's just about the postseason. You take a look at who's in the rankings. And, you know, sometimes it takes you a while. Gonzaga, it took a while for them to convince people that they are legitimately a contender, but now they are. And it doesn't matter that their league is not really that strong. They're in that discussion because that's how good they are. I mean, I've talked to somebody about this the other day when I was one of my first assignments. I mean, so, well, not first assignments, but go back about 15 years, I was doing Gonzaga bracket buster games. They were playing in the bracket buster. I mean, that seems absurd now, but that's where they were. But that's okay. We allow them to get up to the next level. I mean, you know, Villanova doesn't even have big-time football. They're fourth. You know, we look at these teams and we let them climb. We let them climb. I mean, who is this now? St. Bonaventure. St. Bonaventure is 23rd, and they're legit. The guy who coached the other night, in the exhibition game against Louisville, when at West Georgia, was a longtime St. Bonaventure assistant. Happy for Luke Murray, by the way. He latched on at UConn, and UConn is 24th in the preseason poll. You know, and so there's still some discussion, and the coaches don't punish you for being at the non-power schools. They give you got a shot. Go on the court, and if you can get it done, you can just climb up the ladder. So there's that. All right, we'll get trying. I really want to hear, like I said, Stoops' comments because I really want to see.
Yeah, we'll get those on the other side. Normally we play that in the 2 o'clock hour, but I'm working on some guests for the 2 o'clock hour. So yeah, we're gonna play Stoops on the other side here. We also have Chris Max Presser coming up at 1:40. So we don't have to play all of Stoops, but yeah, we'll play the part that you want to hear. You'll react to that. Then Chris Mack at 1:40, and then the 2 o'clock, maybe a conference call, some guests. We can maybe delve into some college basketball. I'm sure you'll have some thoughts after Max Presser. So yeah, with that said, this is going to be kind of a hearty break because I need to catch up on a few spots, but yeah, we'll do that. So why don't you throw us to break and we'll do the damn thing.
Before that, I'd like to tell everybody that November 11th, Pikeville is having free bowling. So you might want to know that.
Hey, very nice.
November 11th from 9 to 11 at Classic Lanes. It's free bowling night, but you must RSVP. So hurry, don't lose your spot. I wonder if they have a bowling team. Do you think they do?
I mean, probably a club, but I mean,
no,
I
I'm talking about a team. Well, like team.
I'm not. I truly am not trying to be a jerk. I don't know anything about college bowling. I know.
Well, not to be a jerk. Why would you be expected to be? Who knows anything about college bowling?
Well, that's fair. But because I've seen it. I've actually watched it a few times, especially women's bowling. I know there's a lot of women's bowling teams.
By the way, speaking of pressure, how about that for pressure? You're on a 5-person team for the team events. You get to bowl 2 frames. That's what you bowl. So player 1 bowls the 1st frame and the 6th frame. Player 2 bowls the 2nd and the 7th. Player 3 bowls the 3rd and the 8th. Player 4 bowls the 4th and the 9th. And then your anchor bowls the 5 and the big 10th frame. So that person is like your
closer.
Your cleanup hitter. That's the one that's got to get it done. Now, if that was all the match was one game, you'd say that's kind of ridiculous. But it's still, the pressure of that is unbelievable. Talk about not getting in a rhythm. You bowl, you got to sit for like 9,000 shots and then you get back up, and your shot could decide the game. But they play a lot of games, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's like 9 games or something, so you do wind up getting. But still, you're only getting the equivalent of like two games. Anyway, it's interesting to watch for that reason, because these are college kids, and they're not pros, and yikes, it's a lot of pressure. And they do have a bowling team. Now, whether it's a club, I guess it might be a club, because like U of L's is a club, right?
Yeah, they have a club. And the reason I was saying that is because, I mean, just like with hockey, I mean, look, the NCAA hockey teams are would beat the club hockey teams, but there is some of the fringe sports teams, that don't have as many. Sometimes the club program is as competitive, if not more so, than the varsity programs.
Well, there's no question, because you know, you think about it. Even in a sport like hockey, for example, a lot of those kids that are on his team, your coaches,
Coach Graham, Brian Graham,
You know, they've been recruited. They've come here to play hockey. I mean, yes, they want to get a good education, but they came to play hockey. It's very difficult for me to think very many of these kids went to these schools to bowl. And maybe that's patronizing of me, but I don't think they did. I mean, I think they wanted to go to a school. Maybe they had a bowling team. Like, if they were looking at 2 different schools and they were like, I'm trying to decide between this one and that one, and that might be a tiebreaker, but I don't think they would pick it just for the bowling team. Now, I'm talking about like on a club level. Now, I do know, if you have a daughter, get a bowling ball in her hand, because it's one of the most accessible athletic scholarships, because schools have had to level their playing field for male and female athletes, which is a good thing to do. And so there's scholarship opportunities for female bowlers that are tremendous, tremendous. I learned that when I went to the high school championships here. So I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about somebody who's trying to get a scholarship. I'm talking about a kid that wants, is just, like you said, they may be really, really, there's some really good bowlers you wouldn't know. There's about 5 of them I know that are on-air people here in Louisville that are like unbelievable. I mean, like, you know.
Well, you can name them. Just incredible. I mean, Mark Hebert bowls a 300 like every 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. So to that end, yeah, there's probably some really good ones. By the way, just for nothing, how we got on to U-Pike bowling. I'm the only host here who would discuss U-Pike bowling. They are 6-1 right now, if you're wondering that.
Wow, that's pretty good.
They play in tournaments. They were in the Buckeye Classic in Columbus. And they finished first. They won it out of 8 teams. How about that?
You should, hopefully, if you know your back gets better, get some practice in, and you should put together a media all-star team and take on U-Pike.
No, I think they would
just call them out right now.
But I would like to have a New York, they play a Broadway softball league. I'd like to have when it gets warm, I'd love to have like a media softball league. You know, that would be
fun. There's a Broadway singers and dancers.
Oh yeah, I mean your show is a team.
That is awesome. I didn't know that. I would.
Oh yeah,
love
it's been going on forever since I was a kid. There's a bunch of softball fields in Central Park.
Oh man, and throw out the regular season when Kinky Boots and Dear Evan Hansen get together. Let me tell you,
sometimes you got to really make sure they don't come to blows in the early innings. You know, have people thrown out. But anyway, so there was something else I was going to say about that was actually relatively significant.
No, yeah, a media softball team. I would love to have the Gas Bags take on, you know,
WHAS would put a team in, the Broadway Softball League. I don't know if you can get the standings, but it's a bona fide league, and they're, you know, it's fun. I mean, it's not like they're killing each other, but they're competitive. I mean, to get to that level, you know, you got to have a certain degree of competitiveness, and so you know, it's any. I think it's open to any legitimate Broadway show. You put a team together. Here it is. Yeah, here's the 2020 Broadway softball teams. It's just funny because they're in divisions. Here's the first division is Ain't Too Proud, Aladdin, Rock of Ages, Hamilton, ooh, Harry Potter, Jagged Little Pill, Jersey Boys, Phantom of the Opera, and Wicked. That's a tough division there.
Wow. I wonder if any of the stars actually play. Like, I feel like, you know, not saying, you know, anything derogatory towards the Chorus Line guys, but like, I wonder if like Sutton Foster is up there like as the pitcher.
I imagine she
I wonder what
play.
The rules no. are and
I'm
stuff
I'm gonna
like
guess
that.
She doesn't play, but still, it doesn't matter. It's still pretty awesome. Then the other division is those are all shows. This next one looks like they give you like theaters and things. Like, this is the Atlantic Theater Company, then Beautiful, which is, I think, Carole King's show, if I'm not mistaken. Blue Man Group. Oh, that'd be awesome if they all played in their outfits.
Oh, man, in character, too. Like, they didn't, that's what I mean. You know, they'd look at the ball, like, well, like, you know, acting like, what is this? And as the guy's running, just throw it in, damn it.
I told you we can't play John in right field. He has to turn everything into a bit. Throw it back.
The chubby baritone from Phantom is legging out a triple because of you jackasses.
Book of Mormon, Dear Evan Hansen, Fault Line Theater, Lion King, also be entertaining if they played in costume, and New York City Opera. And then, but in the last division, looks like it's unions. There's a bunch of...
Oh, God, those I wouldn't want to mess with those guys.
Actors Equity, Local 751, Local 1, the Players Club, so...
With the strip club?
How about... Oh, you know who presents... You know who's a sponsor? Who presents the Broadway Softball League?
Who's that?
That's a nice thing to know. The New York Baseball Yankees.
Hey, that's pretty cool.
They fund the whole thing. Oh, that's so cool.
I mean, it makes sense. A lot of the people on, I mean, they're in phenomenal shape. I mean, all the dancers and everything like that. And then you throw in a little bit of the muscle. I mean, the construction guys. You know, I got friends that are stage managers. I mean, they that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
I love this. They sent them to all the shows. It said, "Do not go onto the fields before 11 a.m. Be sure to remove garbage."
I don't know why it's cracking me up. A bunch of, you know, chorus people, sunflower seeds and chaw.
I look
the
at
damn
that
people
way.
From Aladdin left all the spitters again. Come on, guys.
It's glitter and toe shoes. You know, damn it, left the toe shoes and the glitter in right field. Come on. Oh, this is that'd be awesome. I would like to go see a game. That would be fun. I mean, it's over now, of course. It's in
We've got to start. We had so much fun with the gas bags, and we were all kind of bummed, but also it got busy, you know, football season and everything like that. We had to, we didn't play the fall season, right, as the gas bags chemistry was kind of starting to come together. We've got to get a media league going in the spring.
This is so New
York. Got to get it. I'm calling everybody out, you know, Kent Spencer, Kent Taylor, you know, I mean, everybody.
I know what Fred. I started saying, because this started with the bowling thing, and you can do a bowling league around people's schedules if you want. So, in other words, you determine who is going to bowl. And there's, you know, the machine shows you the score. I guess they set the machine up and you bowl and the machine records the score and then you turn it in for that week. It's not as much fun as all being together, but everybody's got different schedules. So a guy who's on like the 11 o'clock news, maybe he could bowl at 2 in the afternoon, but a guy who's.
Nah. I get what you're saying, but I don't trust these guys. I want eyes on the pins.
Holy cow. I'm trying to think, like, fix somebody who's, you know.
Wow, John Lewis threw a 310. Didn't think that was possible.
That was it. There was the punchline there, and I just couldn't get at it. I was floundering around, could not find it. This is such a perfect New York thing. I love this. They have opening day ceremonies. Could you imagine what those are for the Broadway teams?
Oh, my God.
It must be dance numbers and orchestras, and that must be great. But then here are the fees. 11. What did you guys pay to play in your league as a team?
It was like $450.
All right. Well, it's a little pricier. $1,140 per team. $1,000 of which is not refundable. If you finish the season, you'll get $140 of it back. If the team has no forfeits, you get $140 back. But then you're also accountable for $35 per umpire per game. But this is the So New York thing. I love this. $4 per each extra inning. The guy's not working extra innings unless he gets paid. He's like, I signed on for 7. I'm giving you 7. You want more than that, you're going to have to go into your pocket, Raul. I just love that. That's pretty awesome.
That's so New York.
That is.
By the way, it's going to be awkward because you're going to have to, I think, chastise a Hall of Famer. Okay. We're going to play. We need to take a break here, but I am going to tease this. Dan Issel doesn't like New York, and I think you need to yell at him.
Sorry to hear that.
Well, Jack cuts some sound.
It's America. He can just stay home. He's bitter because they had a great team one year, really great team, and they did win one championship, but they had a really good chance another season, and New York bounced them out of the first round of the playoffs because I was at those games, and it was madness. I mean, it was – that to me was when the ABA came of age, not because New York won, but because it was as big time a pro basketball atmosphere as I was around. I mean, the Coliseum seated actually a little more than the Garden at that time. It wasn't completely sold out, but it was like 16,000, and they were delirious, and it was great basketball. It was really, really fun. So he probably has a bad memory about that. Come on, Dan, let it go. You must have won a few races at Belmont. Speaking of that, by the way, how about the so let me get this straight before we move on. This is such a big sports weekend.
Wait.
The dude who owns Godolphin.
You're listening to Kentuckiana's ESPN 680, WHBE Newburgh, and 105.7 WHBE FM Eminence Frankfurt.
The dude who owns Godolphin is the head. He runs the country. Forgive me. This is so American to me. It's really
what?
Disrespectful. The guy who runs the Godolphin Racing Stable. He's a sheik, right? Isn't he?
I have
like,
no idea. I'm looking this up. We are so late for a break, but we've gone down so many rabbit holes. Godolphin Racing.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sheik. He's I don't know. I don't know what their system is there. Is it?
By His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. Maktoum.
And so Nadugu, what does he do? Is he like a figurehead, or does he actually run the country? Is he like the king? Is he the queen? Is he the jack? Is he the seven of spades? Which card is he?
Let me see. I can't tell if that was offensive or not. The vice president and prime minister of the UAE.
So he's the prime minister?
Yeah. It's a minister of defense and ruler of the Emirate of Dubai.
See? He runs Dubai.
Which is one of the seven emirates of the UAE. So He's the vice president and prime minister, as well as the minister of defense. And he's also, you know, basically like, I guess, one of the senators.
And they had an unbelievable Breeders' Cup. Godolphin won like everything. They won. I mean, it was an unbelievable day. They won, I don't know, what was like $10 million in purses or something?
Yeah, I don't think we won anything here. We burned through 18 G's.
Yeah, nice. I saw that. That was.
Hey, we tried. Depressing. We tried. It was fun.
It's depressing when you see 18 grand, you know, doesn't get you, not get you a boik.
Yeah, I was talking about this, and Maven brought up a perfect scene. You've seen A Bronx Tale, right?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, you haven't seen The Bronx Tale, really? Well, there's a scene where they're at the track. Basically, a synopsis, you know, a working-class Italian kid kind of gets mentored by a gangster. And that kind of, the gangster gives him good advice, but, you know, kind of draws the ire of Robert De Niro, his bus-driving father. Okay. So anyway, so he's at the track with those guys, and he comes down with he's like, I got a tip, you know, on this horse named Kryptonite, and they're all excited, and Kryptonite's up like seven lengths at the turn, and then they see this guy named Mush come down, and he's cheering on Kryptonite too, and without the race isn't even over yet, there's like four furlongs left. Sonny, the gangster, just takes the ticket and rips it up, and the kid's like, what are you doing? He's like, he's up five lengths. He's like, it's Mush's horse, it's not gonna win. And sure enough, you know, it gets caught, and everyone hates Mush because he's just, you know, he's this fake wise guy that knows horses and always picks bums and winner, or, you know, so he's bad luck. So the second I said, I was like, hey, Diener bought the producers a share in there, but I threw an extra $100 in there because if you wanted to get in on it, I knew you weren't up yet because, you know, you'd...
I'll give you your $100 back.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to. But
no, I mean, I will.
But I said, you know, I threw $100 in if you wanted it. If not, I would take it. And the second you showed any, you know, I don't know, we'll see. And then it became my bet. I knew that it was. I had mushed him. I put the Maloki on everybody. So Drew and all your listeners, the 18,000. You know, it's all my fault. It is all my fault. I apologize.
Did we win anything? Did we win some money back?
That I'm not sure of.
I mean, I looked at the ticket. It was more numbers than an IRS return. And then all I know is I was trying to follow on Facebook, and you could see the enthusiasm waning in Drew's. Post. And by the last one, he said, well, we still have $700 left. It's going all on the one in the seventh race. And I looked, and number one, to use the Formula One terminology, was not a podium finish. So speaking of Formula One,
we need a break.
Formula One's going to be the next big thing in this country.
Ooh, I'm convinced. It needs more parity.
I'm convinced.
It's basically Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen, and then everybody.
The problem is the racing's not good. The racing, I watched a lot of the race from Mexico yesterday.
That's just a little bit of a problem, isn't it?
Well, but all the other stuff, you got to remember, most of the people are just, it's about the whole package. And the package, I mean, I don't get me wrong, it's impressive when you get the flyover. You know, they had, what's her name, the little tiny girl, Kristen Chenoweth, sing the anthem. For the race, the last race for the season for the NASCAR, and then right, you know, as the anthem ends, they get the flyover, the four planes fly over, and everybody cheers. But you should have compared that with the open to the race in Mexico. Oh my God!
Was it like a Broadway production?
Oh, it was the Macy's parade, Mardi Gras, the Super Bowl, all rolled into one. I mean, and these cars, the amount of money is unbelievable. The experience for the fans, the commitment to it, it's the reason I say this is, and I could be 1,000% wrong. NASCAR was hot for a while. And it again, no disrespect to Billy Bob and you know, and him, and that, none at all. It's great. You know, they that was their core constituency, the fans in the southeastern part of the United States. But when it started to take off, if you want to call it that, no, again, no disrespect to those people, but it was because the advertisers believed that there was interest in Chicago and New York and, you know, in places where they hadn't traditionally gone. And there was for a long time. The TV ratings were interesting. And then the format got boring. And the last race, the, you know, there was the UFO. Who was it? What was the name of the guy? I can't remember. Matt, was it Kenseth? That was Kenseth, right? Didn't he win? He was so far ahead the last race. All he had to do basically was not drive the car into the concession stand, and he was in good shape. And so he just drove, and he just avoided everybody. And people were like, that's not a championship atmosphere, and that didn't help. And then they put the stages in, which I don't know if it's helped or hurt. I don't think people have to.
Yeah, we'd have to ask Patty Ice. By the way, quick shout out. There was so much stuff in my sports center, I forgot to put this in. But Louisville's own Ben Rhodes won the Truck Series championship over the weekend.
Wow, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, how about that?
Shout out. Won the big? I watched the beginning of the race. I didn't even know one. Who won the car championship? You don't know that either, do you? That's what I mean.
Don't.
We don't even know one. I mean, that's not good.
I should know, but I don't. Well, I know Kyle Larson won the race because that was, you know.
Well, then he should have won the whole championship, shouldn't he? He was one of the four guys in the playoff, right?
I should know this. Yeah. Kyle Larson Racing, the 2021 NASCAR Cup Series champion.
There you go.
So how about that?
So, but I'm telling you, I think I don't know how they make it have a little bit more overtaking, as they call it, because there was very little overtaking in Mexico. But there was also a party because I guess there was a Mexican driver who led a lap for the first time in the history of the Formula One in a race in Mexico, and then wound up on the podium. I think he finished third, so it was fiesta time when the race was over. Man, they were having a party, singing and dancing and yelling, and it was. I don't know. We'll see.
I do know about four or five people that are diehard Formula One fans, including my buddy's wife, Stephanie. His dad is a big fan. Andrew Chernoff, big fan. Patty dabbles in it a little bit. I met this guy at Ruth's Chris that's a server. He's a massive, because we talked for an hour about it.
What's intriguing about it is there's two things. Well, three, really.
Dad,
one,
we are so late for a break.
Yeah. One is the way you can cover international sports now, like the English Premier League, there's tremendous interest in that here because NBC televises it live on the weekends, and so it's the same thing. You could see, so that people know who these drivers are. They know some of the names, number one. Number two, the experience for the fans is just, is like I said, it because it's that's the market there. Catering to, it's a very first class experience, and I think that you know that is appeals very much to the American sporting people here. So I think that's why I said I think it's got a chance to catch on. Uh-oh, somebody's at my front
Simon
door.
Simon agrees.
All right. Well, now you see that somebody must be listening and saying, "Let me help him get to a break. I'll go ring his doorbell." So I'm going to go answer the door, and you can go back to your commercial, and then I'll be back with more radio. So thanks for being with us on ESPN 680 105.7.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
CardNation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.